Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Mark Schwarzer, and welcome to this week's Optus Sport Football Podcast. Joining me throughout this special episode, given that we're all here together in London, Phil, welcome to London. I mean, not that you're new to London, right?
No, I've been here many times before, but thank you. Thanks for the welcome, Schwarzer.
You're welcome. Yeah. Michael Bridges, you're here as well with us. And it's new to you, isn't it, London?
It is, yes. I feel very out of my comfort zone being down here in the big smoke, but I'm delighted to actually see you two, well, not so much you, but to see Phil for the first time face-to-face instead of over a camera lens, and good to see you as well, mate.
Just make sure you don't turn too quickly, mate, because you keep bashing me with your nose. But Jay Bothroyd and Julian Laurent is going to be joining us midway through this segment. But first and foremost, we have to start with the breaking news. Nottingham Forest has been deducted 4 points. By an independent panel for a breach of Premier League profitability and sustainability rules. They've now dropped down to 18th, 1 point from safety. They do have 14 days to notify whether they intend to appeal. Their form has been horrendous of recent time, so they've 1 win in 6 Premier League games, 4 losses and 1 draw. Phil, is this doom and gloom for Forest?
Well, it's not good, is it? Obviously, it's pretty bad, but they've broken the rules. The 4-point deduction isn't that catastrophic in terms of they can still get out of this, even though their form hasn't been good. We've seen other points deductions which have been much more severe. So if I was Forest, I know they can appeal. I would take the 4-point deduction and just move on, try and get out of it, because it could have been a lot worse.
But surely going to appeal, right, Bridget? Because if you might be able to get whatever you can get a deduction, you'll take.
Yeah, they've got to appeal. They've got to go for it, because obviously they'll see what happened with Everton.
Yeah.
They went to appeal. The deduction was reduced. So Forest will have to do exactly the same, because every point in the Premier League is valuable, especially the situation they're in. And I remember when we were chatting about Nuno Espirito Santo when he took over at Spurs, and I was bigging him up.
Yes,
and you give me so much stick back in the day. He did have a really good little... I saw Forest a few times under him early on, and he seemed to have like a bit of a bounce with them, and it's just been horrendous lately. However, I will say, when you're down there at the bottom, I've been there with Sunderland before, everything seems to go against you. They've had decisions go against them, they've had some own goal opportunities, and it just feels now with the deduction, it's just another nail in the coffin for Nottingham Forest. And I feel for the fans, but there is still life. There's still life left in them, I would say.
I mean, it's not a huge points deduction, that's what I'm saying. It's not season over for Nottingham Forest. There is still a chance of them getting out of the relegation zone, right?
Of course there is. Yeah. That's why I'm saying you've got to appeal.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your take?
Absolutely. I think 100% you need to appeal. It just makes it a little bit more difficult for them, because they have been on the slide. They are struggling and they haven't really improved that much. Yes, I know there's been glimpses, but I don't think they've done it anywhere near enough. But it certainly makes the fight for survival that little bit more interesting than it already is. So watch this space. Nottingham Forest have got their backs to the wall and got a lot to do. There's another big game on the weekend, of course, was Fulham against Tottenham.
It wasn't that big a game. I don't think we have to dwell on this one.
How you have changed your tone. Remember the question I asked you last week? We were flying and we had a good laugh and a good discussion. We said Aston Villa and Tottenham have still got to play the top three teams in the division. Are they in the title race? And it was priceless, because I think somebody reminded us that it could be a very Spursy performance against Fulham, which it was.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite surprised, because you were the one who suggested that they were in the title race.
You dived on it and you got so excited. You went, we're still in the title challenge.
Yeah. We can confirm that Spurs are not in the title challenge anymore. And yeah, I mean, losing 3-0 at Fulham, it was a really disappointing performance, like massively disappointing. I know a lot of Spurs fans were really, really down on this, possibly coming off the back of that 4-0 victory at Fulham. And we all got really excited, some of us more than others, talking about title challenges, etc. But there was really little from Spurs here, just all over the park. I know they had a few chances, and on another day, they would have put at least one away and continued the incredible scoring record, which comes to an end, 39 games consecutive scoring in the Premier League, that comes to an end. But even if they'd scored, it just felt like they were second best everywhere, all over the park.
Do you know who I blame? Somebody travelled from Australia from Optus Sport called Colin.
You're right.
He flew all the way over. Last time he was over, Fulham won, and you were in goal, I do believe.
That's right, I was. And so, yeah.
Did you beat that day?
Colin, you can come back anytime, mate. Well done. Yeah. Fulham.
I mean, so it's Colin's fault.
Yes, it is.
Colin travelled. He's been to Craven Cottage twice, and he's seen Fulham win on both occasions. And last time, obviously, was when it was in black and white when Swarty was playing. And yeah, so I feel sorry for Ange Postecoglou.
They're still playing away from home. They're always playing black and white.
Right. Hey. how was that? That's a massive performance for Fulham, eh?
Oh, huge. Absolutely. I mean, I think Fulham have had it in them for a number of like last two seasons now. I think they've shown that they're not just a yo-yo team. I think Marco Silva has done a tremendous job with that team. And I think that was an important and impressive victory. I didn't see it coming. Mm. I have to be honest. I actually thought that Spurs would win it. I thought that the Villa game was a massive momentum swing for Spurs. And I thought from that, they were going to kick on. But and I think the response that Ange Postecoglou gave after the game was very much, I think he felt probably as well that the momentum was with them, that they were going to kick on, but they didn't.
I think that's why he was so angry and he looked so disappointed after the game. That rattled him without a shadow of a doubt. It's the first time I've seen Ange look rattled over the last few years because, you know, when he won the J League, he was settled Celtic. He had a lot of big matches. They got the treble. It's the first time I've seen Ange, apart from when he was in the Socceroos, when he punched was it the Japan game when he punched the... I've seen him not as animated or as upset as that. And I feel like that was it wasn't as bad of a game as the scoreline suggested. I think there was a lot of missed opportunities. Werner was back to his best in front of goal for 1 yard.
Wow. I mean, Bridgie, have you been that close before and missed?
I have, yeah. Okay. Against right. Aston Villa, actually.
Phil, have you been that close and missed?
No,
I haven't either. I've never been that close and missed either. I mean, that was a honking effort.
They had good chances, but they just didn't take them. And Fulham's goals weren't exactly clinical. Hmm. So I think the scoreline doesn't suggest or reflect what that result was. But it was a massive, massive error.
I agree. Son had a great chance. Madison had probably a couple of great chances. Yes, it could have been.
Charleston had a couple as well.
Yeah,
I know. And looking at this, and all of this is logical, but maybe I'm thinking of this as a fan rather than coming at it as former professionals like you who analyze it in a different way. And it's true, there were chances, but I just felt the performance, there was like second to every ball, they just didn't seem up for it. They didn't, even though they created a few chances, they didn't seem up for it. And coming off the back of that Villa game, I expected so much more. So it was a real downer. And I know a lot of fans were really, really down on this as well, thinking that this was a chance to kick on and move into that top four, and it just didn't happen.
Can I put a question across to both of you then?
Go on then.
Tim Sherwood was talking, he was on the Opta Sport doing the... obviously, the coverage. He was saying that teams have worked out Ange Postecoglou and Spurs. Please, really?
But
it's one blitz.
So the way that they play is very obvious. Everybody knows. Up until this point, nobody's really been able to deal with it to a large degree. Prevent them from scoring, of course. Fulham did, but it was more so due to the fact of what we were just saying there.
You're having that comment?
No, but it's an easy throwaway comment, isn't it? You can say, well, they've lost 3-0 and teams have worked them out. If Fulham can beat them 3-0, that means they've worked them out, right? I think that's more of the way that the comment has been thrown out there, rather than saying, you know, they were just a bad day, off day, and Spurs on another day would have won that game comfortably.
I agree, but we do know that, and we had Tommy Orr on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he'd played with Ange, and he said that, you know, with Ange, there is no a plan B is to do plan A better, right? Yep. So if there is no plan B, then maybe... At some point, I mean, it's not that they get found out, but you know what you're going to get from Tottenham.
But it's how do you stop that? And Fulham are the only ones, really, this season that have kept, like you say, nobody to score from Tottenham Hotspur, which is a massive tick.
But is that down to Fulham or is that down to wayward finishing?
Correct. Yeah. So there's a bit, you're looking at both ends, but I've got to give Fulham massive respect, massive credit for that result because, Swarty, that was very, the form that Spurs were in and the way Fulham produced that result, that was huge.
Yeah, absolutely. Full credit to Fulham for that performance. But let's just quickly remind ourselves of what Ange was like after the game and the response he gave, which is always makes me laugh a little bit when he gets a bit angry. Doesn't look at the camera anyway, but it just looked, he looked like steam came out of his ears. And this is what he had to say after the game.
How much of a dent do you feel this might be on your top four hopes, especially after the steps forward last weekend?
Look, it's all over. So we'll just go for six. I mean, you know, what am I supposed to say to that? I mean, we're 2 points behind Villa. Yeah, so... What does that mean with 10 games to go? We've got 10 games to go.
Just with the huge strides forwards, beating Aston Villa last weekend, the chance to capitalise on that tonight, put yourself into those top four places, just psychologically?
Yeah, psychologically, I don't really worry about that stuff. It's 10 games to go. There's so much football to be played. If we had a one today, nothing was guaranteed. If we had a loss last week, nothing was guaranteed. It's 10 games to play, so I don't worry about that stuff. I never have. For me, I keep trying to... It's not about just falling into a place on the ladder. You know, we can finish fourth, great, and everyone's happy, brilliant. It's nothing that hasn't been done at this football club before. It's about how we play. That's all I'm interested in. So we were disappointing today, so we've got to learn from that, move forward and tackle the next game.
So top four, is it... It's still up for grabs, of course. He said 10 games to go, right?
I think top four is potentially still on.
Of course it is.
God, I hope this doesn't come back to bite me, Ed.
No, but it is
still on.
Of course it is.
The title is obviously not on, and it wasn't last week, even after beating Villa. And
I allowed this guy to...
But I'll give you... I'll let you off because you're just starting to get used to what it's like to be involved in a podcast with us too, right?
Yes.
That we love... We love sucking you in, right? We love stitching you up and throwing you out there to the wolves.
Well, he's got a flight to catch and he's very panicked. He's going to miss it as well, Swartz. So
yeah, we've got loads to talk about still. It's still going to be a while, right?
Yeah, let's really dwell.
So we're saying definitely we can agree Spurs are more than capable of catching Villa, right?
Yes, definitely easy. Yeah, I'm seeing easy.
Of course they are. They had a really bad day at Fulham and I'm still sticking with the fact that it was a really, really poor performance. But they, even in that poor performance, they created, you know, five or six really good chances. So on another day they would have scored. On another day we could have been talking about another comeback for Spurs, but
I think it's going to be a good test of character as well. Ange is going to learn a lot from the players. How they're going to reflect off no score, clean, you know, no goals in the game, getting beat, what they're going to be like when they bounce back. You know what he's like. That'll be his next question. What am I going to get from these players?
Van de Ven, was he missed? Because I mean, Ange Postecoglou said no, it wasn't because of Van de Ven.
He's one of the quickest out there, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it can't just be that you miss someone like that and everything, you just sort of fall to pieces. No. I don't know.
Listen, he's been missing missing for quite a while, and Spurs managed to handle that situation very well. He is one of the key players to the way Ange plays with a high line, because when you play such a high line, you need quick defenders to be able to read the situation. And he was definitely, he's definitely going to be missed this time around, I would say.
On the weekend, there was also a massive, massive FA Cup fixture. There was a few of them, actually. But the one that stood out, of course, was Manchester United at home to Liverpool. The rivalry in itself is huge. The game was sensational, Bridgie. Was it like one of the best FA Cup games you've seen?
I would say so, because of the way that it kept going from one team in the lead, the next team taking the lead, and the way it finished, and Diallo coming on at the end. I witnessed him play at Sunderland for a spell as well. He was absolutely outstanding. And the way he was the guy that won the ball on the edge of the box, the way he finished the move at the other end of the field for such a young lad, and then to get not only that, a second yellow card for taking the shirt off in celebration. Like, please, that is the biggest schoolboy ever that you know. But won the game. The game was magnificent.
I sat there watching it going, this is what the FA Cup is about, right? This is, if you've never watched an FA Cup game and you watch this for the very first time,
you're getting sucked in for life.
That's what draws you in.
Right? I sat there whooping. I was just making noises watching this game because
whooping.
Yeah,
okay,
whooping.
Explain.
Have you never whooped?
No.
It's a bit like,
hang on, is that like a whoopee cushion whoop?
What is that?
Whoa. I was whooping.
Okay.
I was making noises, but I was very excited. I think this is one of the best ever FA Cup games.
We got there in the end, didn't we?
We got there.
I was very excited. I think this is one of the best ever FA Cup games of all time, I would say, given the magnitude of it. It's a quarterfinal. Yeah. There's a place at Wembley at stake. It is Manchester United against Liverpool, which is arguably the biggest rivalry in English football. And then...
Not forgetting, Anthony actually scored a goal.
Yes.
Who?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing was about that was that Ten Hag said, that was the Anthony I can remember at Ajax. I'm like, what? You've brought him on and he scored a goal. That's like, seriously, what? Did he only ever bring him on as a substitute? Like,
don't ask me the question, by the way. Don't ask it.
Don't ask you the question.
Don't ask me the question that you've asked so many times this season on the podcast.
Go on.
Could this be a turning point in Manchester United's season?
Well, now that you've asked it, can it?
You do, actually.
How many times have we asked that question?
He's not
almost
the only
every
one,
week.
He's not the only one.
Yeah.
But is it?
I don't know. There have been so many turning points or potential turning points this season. But to be fair,
that has got to galvanise you as a team.
It has to. It has to.
Against Liverpool, right? So the rivalry, like I said before, is enormous between these two. You could see the way that they celebrated after the game. You could see the Liverpool fans crying. And that's not just because Klopp's leaving in the season, right? That because that meant so much to beat Manchester United. And because it flipped so much, and Liverpool seemed to just have it in the bag, and then it just fell away.
I actually thought Liverpool were really quite wasteful in normal time. When they were when they were 2-1 up, it felt like they were almost, they were getting into the box so many times, and they were creating openings inside the box, which really should have been finished off. And it almost felt like, it's not like we don't need to try, but we're not going to be as clinical. We don't need to be as clinical. This is... It's not, I don't know if they thought it was in the bag, but it just felt like when they were in dangerous areas, they weren't making the most of it. And there were a lot of chances. I didn't see the statistics in terms of touches in the opponent's box. I did see the statistic. There were, I think it was 53 shots in this game.
53?
Yes. Obviously, it went to extra time, but that gives you an idea of what kind of game it was. But I just felt Liverpool had, they had this game. They should have killed it off and they didn't. And yeah, maybe that will galvanise.
Do you know, there's one man that was very pleased when Diallo's ball went in the back of the net, and that was Rashford.
Rashford, yeah.
I would be cleaning his boots for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you look at it, the draw, I mean, Klopp will be pulling his hair out that they're not there and they could have got the draw against Coventry. And okay, we're not saying it's a foregone conclusion they're going to win this game, but it's the one you wanted, right? Man United got a greater chance. If they don't get through that, then it is a crisis, right?
Well, maybe if you're Liverpool and if you want to put a positive spin on it, okay, we've got a couple of, you know, we've got a game less. Maybe that will help in the Premier League. They've had a lot of injuries. Get people back, get people fit, focus on winning the Premier League. Maybe it could be silver lining in a cloud. I'm not sure, but it probably won't feel like that once you lose a game like that.
So do they fully focus now on the Premier League? I mean, they've got Europa League, right? But is really their main focus now the Premier League, or do you think they've got to still
switch? You know what it's like when you're in as many comps. You've got, you can't just say we're going to focus on that. Klopp wants
Liverpool, right?
Mm. It's Liverpool. They want to win both. I think they'll get the Europa League without a shadow of a doubt. And obviously in the Premier League, you the way that they are down to their bare bones, but the youngsters have stepped up. They've shown that they can do it. You know, against Chelsea in the extra time, in the games when they managed to get the League Cup, and then you've got they're going for the Premier League. Are they going to have enough bodies to get them over the line? Arsenal absolutely flying. I mean, this, you're going to hate this, me saying this. I've really enjoyed watching Arsenal this season.
Yeah, no, but
I mean, I really have enjoyed them.
They're one of the best teams to watch in the league, them and Spurs on their day.
I mean, this is like amazing. We should get you to...
It's like a counselling session.
We're just working it through.
Hey, guys.
Jay Boothroyd, Arsenal might win the league. He's Arsenal. He's Arsenal. He's been just throwing this Arsenal vibe on us behind the scenes.
No, but I mean, you know, objectively speaking, and we do try and be objective on this podcast. But... Yeah, some of us try to be objective on this podcast. You know, Arsenal are a really, really good team.
I mean, Bridget, you're really good at being objective. You know, when it's Newcastle, Leeds, Tottenham, so forth, but the rest, not really. Go on, and more. Sorry,
and
I know
there's
more. But
we've just got to enjoy it. The running is going to be incredible.
Yeah, absolutely will be. I just really, really, really quickly want to go on to Brentford. Lost to Burnley. Yeah. They're in trouble, right?
They're in trouble, definitely. And yeah,
are they going to stay up?
I think they will. Yes, but does he stay as manager next season?
Well, yeah, maybe he's taken them as far as he can.
Does Tony stay?
Tony almost certainly doesn't stay, but Tony is almost certainly the reason why they don't go down, because he probably got enough goals to get them out of it. But I think it's only 4 points above the relegation zone.
I mean, the run is horrendous.
Mm. It is.
And a team that you used to, you know, you say what Tim Sherwood was saying, that teams have worked out Tottenham. Teams have worked out a bit about Brentford. And the biggest one for me for them this season as opposed to last season, the amount of goals they've conceded in the last 15 minutes of games. It doesn't matter where they're at. The biggest one I watched this season was when they were beating Manchester United at Old Trafford. They had the momentum. And then obviously McTominay came on. It was complete capitulation. But they've, I don't know whether it's fitness levels, concentration levels, whatever it is, there's something that in their DNA this season has been horrendous late on in games. It's cost them.
I think found out a little bit. I think teams have worked them out pretty much, and it's no longer the fortress as it once was. This week, WSL, the WSL is now down to pretty much a two-team race. Chelsea 6 points clear of Arsenal after their victory, level with City on 40 points after they defeated Brighton 4-1. For more, here's Narelle and Amy Chapman from Optus Sports Women's Football Wrap.
Well, it was a performance that knocked their socks off, wasn't it, Amy? I know that's a bit cringe, but... Kickoff delayed by 30 minutes due to Arsenal. I don't even think it was a case of forgetting alternative socks. I think it was the case of they just didn't even think about the fact that their white socks might clash with Chelsea's socks.
It's a remarkable story at that level, and someone's head has to roll for that, I think. And I think about, you know, what I've forgotten leading into a football match before. I did once bring two left boots to a game.
Oh, that's bad.
Otherwise, your mum forgetting the oranges under sixes. But at this level, with so much on the line, a frustrating start for Arsenal to the game. Obviously, a bit of a fashion crime with the black clashing, but again, the performance, it was all Chelsea, wasn't it? It's a fantastic stadium, a fantastic crowd, but Arsenal, they really needed some points out of that game and just didn't show up.
Yeah, and so in the end, obviously, they had to go and buy socks from Chelsea's megastore, take them up. How much of a factor is that on the players? Do you think that's easy to brush aside, or do you think they would have been feeling flustered going into the match?
Well, I think with the delay and all of this confusion, I think they're all professionals. They know how to switch on when they need to, and you know, you can see why they would have been a bit frustrated on the day, particularly wearing Chelsea's actual socks. It's, you know, a bit comical, but I think when we look at the players that Chelsea have, they were a class above on that day. The Aussies, they didn't really shine. They tried, but I think Lauren James certainly led the line again for Chelsea, and they're going to be the ones to beat, really.
And despite all the injuries Chelsea had coming into it, they still managed to get the job done and get the job done well. Arsenal, though, some are saying it was their worst performance all season. There were tears at full-time, Leah Williamson crying. They know that they're out of this title race. Now, 6 points off the pace, it's going to be very hard to come back from that.
Yeah, and so much on the line for that game. And when you don't play well, if it's a close game, Kim Little had a moment of brilliance there, but really they looked off the pace, I think. So now it is a two-horse race. It is Man City, it's Chelsea. Which, you know, for the neutrals, it's nice to see a few teams in the race still, but a disappointing performance from Arsenal.
Manchester City, it was the Mary Fowler show, which is something we don't often say. It was her first league start since November. She scored and got an assist, 4-1 against Brighton, and that was Man City's 10th straight win. It's all going right for them.
Yeah, it's always a hot topic. Did Mary Fowler make the right decision going to Man City? She wasn't getting the minutes or the starts she perhaps deserved, but a fantastic performance from her, an excellent goal and an even better assist, you might say. So when you look at the players she's linking up with, Lauren Hamps, Bunny Shaw, there's some unbelievable players out there, and I think she's still shining. So fantastic for her and great for Man City.
And the other thing going forward now is City's sole focus is on the WSL. They were knocked out of whatever remaining competitions they were in last week. Chelsea, though, they are still alive in all competitions. And could that be the difference in the title race, Schwartzy?
Yeah, it can absolutely be the difference. Chelsea have so much still to play for in every competition that there is up for grabs. They have got the squad, they have got the quality, but injuries is the issue. Manchester City, full focus is on the WSL. And I've got that feeling that Manchester City have got the momentum, have got the players and the full focus on WSL. So I think they are slight favourites in my book, but don't write Chelsea off just yet. Emma Hayes knows what she's doing, of course, and has an abundance of track record in the WSL, knows how to win things. So watch this space. Right, we're going to have a quick break. We're going to change our lineup. So that's a goodbye to you, Bridgie. Thank you very much. I mean, it's goodbye on the podcast, but we'll see you later on anyway. But
unfortunately, but thank you very much. Really enjoyed that.
It's been good, mate.
Bye, Bridgie.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's a great new written series rolling out on Optus Sport this week, Mind Matters, covering injuries, transfer dramas, and the most dramatic of all, goalkeepers. Mark Schwartzer, you're part of this series. Can you tell us why you got involved?
Are you saying our goalkeepers are dramatic?
You do love a bit of drama.
Yeah, we do. We do. Personally, because of the actual fact of being a goalkeeper, the pressures that come with that, very isolated, it's an individual position. You train a lot in small groups. The pressure, the expectation, when you make a mistake, it's a very lonely position. And because of the fact that you make a mistake, as we all know, as a goalkeeper, 9 times out of 10, it ends up in the back of the net. And it could cost you a team, or does cost you a team, a win or even 3 points. So, yeah, it's the pressures that go with all that. How do you deal with it? What do you do along the way? What little traits do you sort of learn to adapt with that pressure and how lonely and isolating those positions that position can be when everything is against you, when the fans are against you, when even you feel like the teammates are against you and the manager's against you. Yeah, so it's pretty tough. But, you know, it's just part of being a professional footballer, and you kind of have to learn to live with it and get on with it throughout your career. So it's a tough position.
Well, if you're interested in hearing more about that, Mind Matters is live on the Optus Sport app now and across the next week. Some fascinating stories, most of which you've never heard before.
Very much so. Well, we're on to La Liga now. Let's firstly welcome Jay Bothroyd here and Julian Laurens. Thank you very much, guys, for joining us. We're all in person, which is the first time we've done this.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we're going to talk about La Liga, Phil. That's your specialty.
Yes.
La Liga time. We love La Liga time, don't we?
I do.
I know. I do as well. I really do.
And best league in the world.
Some of us love it more than others.
Yeah, I know. But look, it's live and exclusive on Optus Sports. So we all love it, don't we, Jay?
Exactly. We all love it.
Of course. Big game this weekend, of course. Atletico Madrid against Barcelona. The scoreline wasn't a true reflection of the actual game, was it?
The scoreline was 3-0 to Barcelona, and Atletico started the game really well, actually. First half an hour, they pressed really intensely. They created some chances, and then Barca scored, João Félix scoring against his parent club, as he'd done earlier on in the season. And it kind of fell away for Atletico Madrid. Atletico had made loads of changes to the starting 11. Antoine Griezmann wasn't in there. Koke wasn't in there. Memphis Depay wasn't in there. A lot of people were very tired from the midweek Champions League exertion.
Depay come on as a sub, though.
Hey?
Depay come on as a sub. Why is he tired?
Because he ran around a lot and
20 minutes.
Yeah. to be fair, he could have started, and Diego Simeone decided to go with Rodrigo Riquelme up alongside with Morata, and it didn't seem to make a lot of sense. But at the start, it did. And the first 30 minutes, they were actually really good. And then João Félix scored, and it all sort of fell apart. And Barcelona now, they're looking quite good, quietly good. Like, they had players missing and they still came and won for the first time at the Metropolitano for 14 months. They were the last team to win a league game there. No one had won since last January. So this is a really, really massive result for them. Puts them second, leaves Atletico Madrid out of the Champions League places as well. They're fifth. So it was a big, big, big result all round.
Antoine Griezmann on the bench. That would surprise you, Julian?
I was, and then I learned that his ankle was bad, and I think he won't go with France. He will miss the two friendly matches that they have.
He did come on half-time though, didn't he?
Yeah, but I don't think he was fully fit, hence why he was on the bench after he had such a good performance against Inter Milan in midweek. And he brings so much to this team in terms of creativity, but also the leadership. Everything he does is just usually perfect. I think not being ready enough to play or to play 90 minutes was a big problem for Atleti.
Are you a biggest fan of Antoine Griezmann as this man is here, Phil?
I think so.
Do you think he's like one of the best?
But I don't think anybody can not like Antoine Griezmann. It's impossible not to like him.
Oh,
No.
I know someone who might.
I'm like, really?
No, I like him. I like him a lot as well, to be honest. But the only thing I would say is, you know, he didn't do it at Barca. And I'm thinking, if he's that good, why couldn't you do it at a bigger club?
Players have that, right?
Yeah, but he's that good.
Times when different clubs,
you're playing with better players.
He had the best player of all time playing in his position at Barcelona.
You can adapt if you're that good. That's all I'm saying.
You kind of have to play for him.
Play another position, could he? You could have moved over. He's better.
Yeah, I just think everything, and we saw against Inter, it looks so easy for him and so beautiful, so elegant. Everything, every touch, every run, everything is just. He's 32 now, so we have one more year of him, maybe two maximum, then he would go to MLS. So let's enjoy.
Why even, is that though? Even I think players are playing longer now.
32 to
yeah,
30.
I think he runs
12 kilometers a game, which
yeah, but he doesn't
is more
have
than
to
you run in all your career.
Probably.
But do you think he's that hard a working player? Because my critique, we've had this discussion a number of times on the podcast, is that I don't feel at times he contributes enough to the team in terms of the work rate.
He's literally the hardest
going
working
forward. There's no doubt about it at all.
No, but he's a luxury player as well, though, isn't he? Like, I'm saying, he floats.
I'm leaving.
Into positions. No, I look at him and I say he floats into positions and he picks up positions.
I'm with Jay on this.
Like, he does get back.
Yeah, but you build your team around him. So that's why he didn't work at Barcelona. In a structured team where he has one position, it won't work.
So he has to be the talisman then?
Yeah. So in France, he has that free role, especially now where he's a bit deeper in midfield. And Deschamps says to him, do what you want. We need you everywhere. So go and do it. Same with Atletico. But yeah, it's true. You're right is that if it's a very positional player, he could not do.
No. When you say he runs the most, what do you mean? Do you actually 12 kilometres that he runs every game? Yeah, but now, high intensity runs. High intensity. What are they? You can jog around the pitch. High. But the high intensity runs
matter. That's what Simone, you can't play for Simone and not do that. So for that, it's perfect for them.
Shall we talk about João Félix? Because he scored against...
No, I don't like this conversation about agreement. No,
hold on, can I ask? That before we say this, do you know what Atletico Madrid... When I watch Atletico Madrid play, I look at them and I say they're very organised. So you say the team's built around Griezmann. I look at them and I say the team's very organised. Attacking-wise, he goes and floats. But defensively, everyone's behind the ball.
Yeah.
To make so his job comfortable.
Comfortable in which
way? As in he's not ratting around, he's not chasing everywhere, he's just getting back into position behind the ball.
Yeah, but then he will recover the ball on the edge of his own box.
Yeah, he does.
But I'm saying he makes passes, I'm saying he don't... No, but sprinting up and down. I think he just gets himself into a zone. A bit like Berbatov. Berbatov used to get himself back in the zone.
I'm going to hold my hand up and say...
Not as much. He took the beep. Yeah. But I'm saying that he kind of got back into an area where he can pick up the ball and cheat a little bit.
But a lot of those players are like that, right? I mean, and I think what Atletico and what you're saying about the fact that Simone builds his team around. I mean, with DePaul in midfield in particular, Koke as well, the work rate that those guys... I mean, I'm a massive Paul DePaul. Yeah. I think DePaul's a... underrated player, actually.
Koke ran 17 kilometres.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. I think they're amazing. Their engine is phenomenal. And that allows Griezmann to have a little bit more luxury at times. Going forward, his quality is absolutely up there with the best. But I just haven't felt like we've seen it enough to be classed as a really, really top-class player.
Hold on. What's top-class player?
Like one of the best players in the world. We're talking.
Depends which season. The 2018 season when maybe he wins the World Cup, he wins the Europa League.
But you don't think in the World Cup, right? He played a different type of role, and he was actually more disciplined. And I thought at the World Cup in 2018, that was a Griezmann that I hadn't seen before.
That was a great.
He
was
the work rate and the discipline that he showed in that team was like, wow. I didn't think he was capable of that.
Yeah.
Whereas I watch him in Atletico Madrid and I don't see that as much.
But you said that. He's intelligent, isn't he?
Yeah.
So I think he can play in any position, but I'm seeing looks. I'm seeing everything
shaking his head.
Kind of going to Phil.
He's going to miss his flight as well. He's not happy with
getting a really
Griezmann slander, man.
There's no slander.
The notion that he is not an unbelievably hardworking player. He does everything for the team. You do not see superstar forwards tracking back and making tackles on the edge of their penalty areas. He does that all the time. All the time, genuinely. Look at the tackles that he makes. Look at the work rate that he puts in. No other superstar forward is doing that. And he is a superstar forward.
He's not really a forward, though, is he? That's exactly he's more of a midfielder. No, he's a luxury player. He goes and gets the ball. I've seen him go and get the ball deep.
Yeah.
He comes across the halfway. So he's not a striker then, is he? He's not a forward. Forward stay high.
You never drop deep.
Huh?
You never drop deep when you play.
No.
To pick up
what you play.
Yeah.
What do you play? No.
Yeah. No. Not that deep. Not that deep. I want to loud. I probably wanted to.
I'm talking about strikers, actually. Morata. Where are we with Morata?
Yeah, we were talking about this stuff.
He can score some great goals. He always gets himself in a great position, but then misses big chances, doesn't he?
Phil, we spoke about this off air, didn't we? I think he's very much a confidence player. When he's high, he is high.
Yeah, but extreme, right? Yeah. So he's an extreme confidence player.
Because so when he's low, he's really low.
Everybody's a confident player. Let's get that right.
Yeah.
But there's extreme ones. So he must be an absolute extreme.
Yeah, I think he's really up and down. And do you know what the thing is? How much money is it? His transfer fees?
Loads,
180 million.
Yeah, something like that.
So he's having a great season when needed and he just gets a move. But I think he works hard. He runs channels.
There's no doubting that. He works hard, but it's the quality of the end product, right? There's got to be a question mark over
that. If he goes through on goal, I'm thinking, he could miss this one.
Yeah, it's one of the best seasons in his career.
I know.
Outstanding this year. So maybe that efficiency that I was lacking at a time where he would score the hardest chances and miss the easiest one. Certainly this season, I feel that it's changing a little bit.
I think he's a couple of goals away from having his best ever season.
Right.
And yet, here we are having this discussion because there isn't the consistency and there isn't that feeling like when he goes through on goal, he's going to score. And if you look at him as a striker, you think this guy genuinely does have sort of everything you want from a striker apart from that consistent ability to score. And it is mental with him, and he can be very fragile mentally, and when he goes down, he goes really, really down, and it's part of the manager's job to pick him back up, and that's why he keeps picking him, keeps putting him in, keeps giving him confidence. But he's not consistent enough to be world class.
One thing I would say about Morata that I look at when I see him, to me there's different kinds of strikers and forwards. For me, I look at him and I say he's a shooter. he's not a finisher. So he'll go through and he'll have chances and he'll score great goals when he doesn't have to think about it. As soon as he has time to think about finishing, that's when he misses it. A little bit like the Calvert-Lewins of this world. He gets into amazing positions, but when he has time to think about the chance, he misses it. When he doesn't have time to think about it, he'll do an amazing...
He's the opposite of Lewandowski. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, Lewandowski. Like, but he can do both, though, to be honest. He's one of the best ever at finishing.
Joao Felix.
So I wanted to talk about Joao Felix because...
Is this a discussion, though? Is this being brought up? Are people talking about it in Spain? Because in England, it doesn't happen, right? You don't play against your parent club because it's always in the contract.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, so this does happen. Yeah, true, this does happen. And Xavi said that he specifically chose him for this game because he knew he was going to be extra motivated. He isn't actually probably in Barcelona's best starting 11 at the moment. He hasn't been in the last few weeks, but he put him in this game because he said he's extra motivated and he scored. And he didn't have the most amazing game, but he did score like he did in the first game against Atletico Madrid. I want to ask Jay, like, when you play against the team that you played against before, if you'd left on the not very good circumstances.
100%. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Especially when you're like playing against a manager. You don't like...
Yeah, so I think it depends on how you left.
If you leave on good terms and it's like, okay, I want to... But even if you score, you're like, I'm not really going to celebrate. Yeah. But then there's other clubs you play for. You might not like the manager. You might not like the fans or whatever. And then you feel like, I need to put 100% in and prove they're wrong.
Yeah. I've got a friend who was a journalist who's covering the game last night, and he was in the tunnel, and afterwards he said he saw Joao Felix speaking to loads of the Atletico Madrid players, really friendly. The Atletico president came around, gave him a hug, so the relationship behind the scenes actually with a lot of the players is actually quite good. It's just the fans do not forgive him.
I don't know why he gets a lot of stick. I'll be honest with you, when he came to England and he was playing, I really liked him as a player. The bits that I saw, I was like, he's really intelligent, he plays in that kind of number 10 role like Griezmann, I would say. Not as good as Griezmann, but you can see that he's still young and he's got lots of abilities. He's got speed, he can shoot, he can score from anywhere.
Technically.
I think he's that kind of player that's going to get better as he gets older.
The problem is that he's so good that he should be doing it more. He should be doing it more.
That comes with age. I mean,
he's not that young, he's 25.
Yeah, but I'm saying sometimes you develop later than others, right? So I'm saying for me, I look at him and say we're going to start seeing the best of him like 27, 28.
The problem is Atletico Madrid paid so much money for him.
Mm. Yeah.
And therefore, the expectation is, doesn't matter how old he was, the expectation was he
needed 125 million.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the problem.
And he was 19 and he'd had half a good season with Benfica.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Which tells you bad decision to play that much for a player.
I'd love to have him at Arsenal. Coming off that left, I'd love to have him because he's got intelligence. He can see a pass. He can shoot. He can go both ways. I'd love to see him at Arsenal.
They got Kai Havertz, mate. You don't need him. Anyway.
Okay.
Almeria.
Yeah.
Finally.
Celebrate.
Finally.
So regular listeners to the podcast may or may not know that Almeria, the bottom team in La Liga, they had gone 28 games this season without winning. They didn't win any of the last three games of the previous season. So it had been 31 games without winning. And they finally won. They changed their manager. They brought in Pepe Mel. Remember Pepe Mel?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Old school.
He was sort of floating around. Came back. He was in Greece, his last job. Came back to Almeria and oversee this victory against Las Palmas by 2-0. They're still going down. They've still only got 13 points, but they have finally won. And some Almeria fans were thinking, it's gone so long now, we might as well just not win and go down as being
history.
Historically bad.
That's what new managers can do for you, though.
Yeah.
It's just a bit late.
It's a bit late, but yes.
The luck a bit. The luck that they didn't have early in the season, they had a bit in that game at Las Palmas, who are a good, decent home team usually.
What's the longest you've ever waited for your team to win?
I don't know, maybe three games, four games, maybe. It wasn't that bad. But you know, the thing is,
The longest winless streak you ever had in your career. Four games.
Yeah, I think so.
Can
you imagine 28 games?
You were at Cardiff.
Yeah.
QPR,
Wolves. That's to me something. It must have been longer than four games, surely.
We need to check that.
We have to check that.
That's a lie.
Someone check that.
I'm
saying four games.
Where we've lost, we've gone without winning more than four games.
I don't remember going out there and being like, man, it's been like 2 months and 3 months. No.
Well,
what about you, Shorty?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you exactly, but it's got to be 8-9 games at least where you've gone on a bad run.
But do you get to a point where you think like we might never win again?
No, I didn't ever think that. It's just about you need to get your neck. You got to get that win really quickly. because you're running out of time to get that first win. Even if it's only 10 games in or 8 games in or 5, you kind of go, because once you get to a point where you go over, you tip over the edge, it's almost like, no, we're not going to. And some players' heads go completely. They almost switch off and they almost start looking elsewhere. And you kind of go, for morale,
yeah,
for swing of a momentum, you need to get that result.
Do you not think, like, when you're one of those bottom teams, and I was at QPR, even when you get a draw, though, that feels like a win against some teams, especially when you're at the bottom.
It depends on where you are.
So that's why you don't feel so like demoralized. If you keep losing, that's the difference.
If you go 28 games. If you go 28 games without winning.
Exactly, yeah. But if you're drawing games and you're picking up points here and there, it's not as bad, I don't think.
True. It is. It can be really tough. I think I agree with you.
It must be tough for you, though, if you're conceding goals all the time.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Yeah. So then all of a sudden it starts to point, we need clean sheets, and you start looking at goalkeeping, you start looking at everywhere, and then all of a sudden a couple of positions have been changed and the same results still happen. And then all of a sudden the fans, and yeah, it's tough, of course. But it's that, getting that
first
win.
It's always the forwards that end up getting the stick.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, because if you're not scoring, if you get a chance.
I think it's equally... There's like many places, positions all over the pitch like that. If you're just, it depends. I think there's a number of factors that come into it. Goalkeeper is a very easy position for people to criticize. Strikers are very easy to criticize. And then sort of central defenders, because you're in the midst of things and that's where things happen.
I'll tell you why, because I think when, for example, I went QPR, right? And I was at Cardiff before, I scored 20 goals. So I was like having a couple of chances every game. I go to QPR and it's the opposite. Now I'm getting like one chance every couple of games. So it was the opposite. And when you're not scoring, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's missed a chance. And then all of a sudden your confidence, you start thinking, man, why am I not scoring? I'm getting in the positions, but I keep like overthinking things. Yeah. Then it becomes difficult. I look at full midfielders and defenders. They come into the team. They get a cheer from making a tackle. They get moves from blocking things with their face. Yeah. And I'm saying that's why it's easier for a defender to transcend into a Premier League player than a forward, because we're based upon assists or goals, whereas defenders just have to make tackles and kick the ball out.
Yeah, but hang on a second.
If Bridgie was here, he would agree with me. Defenders have done nothing for
10 months of the season, and then all of a sudden the last 4 games score 5 goals and get another move or a new contract.
That's morale. That's no one else.
So I don't agree with that. Like, I think not every position. I certainly think strikers and goalkeepers, there's a bigger spotlight on them, and it's easier to pick on them and go, right, that's happening. He's not keeping clean sheets. Every time someone has a shot, ends up in the back of the net. And there are times where you go in a game and you might lose a game 3-1, and there's 4 shots on goal, or there's only 3 shots on goal, and then you just think, I've done nothing today other than pick the ball out of the back of the net. And then once that happens a couple of times, even though you may never have had a chance really of any of the goals, or maybe on another day you might have got a finger touch save and you may have made a miraculous save, it's just not going for you.
Here's one for you. This is what I want to ask you. So some forwards that I know, I won't name their names, but if they score a couple of goals but they lose, they're like, I've done my job.
Yeah, that's the thing.
As a goalkeeper, do you feel like that?
If you lost,
you've conceded. No. So there's no way there.
Say like if you save a couple of penalties.
It's not even that. No, it's more about how you perform. Because sometimes, depending on what team you're in, right? So it depends on how things are going and depends on your circumstances. So you're kind of like, almost like, if you really can't do much else other than what you've done, you think you've had a good game, you've saved everything you possibly can, but you've still conceded because there have been mistakes in front of you. There's nothing you could have done. A guy scored from 6 yards or a cutback or a worldie from distance. What else do you do? You can't bang, you know, you can't beat yourself up over it.
So at that point, you say, I played well.
I've got to continue what I'm doing and hopefully the rest will fall into place. It's not about, I don't care what else is doing. It's more about, right, I've got to keep playing well, because if I play badly and then someone else is playing badly in front of me, imagine what the score would have been like.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like
that striker's mentality, selfish mentality.
We had a dressing room. It was like that, to be honest. We had a great relationship, everyone, but we did used to blame each other. We'd be like, if defenders got a clean sheet and we didn't score, it'd be like, bloody hell, guys, you know, you've missed loads of chances today. But then if we scored goals and they conceded and we end up drawing, then I'd be like, well, I've done my job. What's going on?
Yeah,
kind of thing. And that's the way it kind of was at Cardiff. But then there's other teams happening at QPR where we played Fulham and we got tumped. I forgot the score now, but we got beat. And it was just like...
Of course you did.
Roy was manager. No, but it was one of those ones where it was just like, I played well, but we didn't get any chances to score, but we lost still.
Yeah.
And it was just like, what more could I do? And someone heard us say that, me and DJ Campbell. And afterwards, there was a big inquest in the change room. It was like, oh, you guys were separating yourselves from the team and whatnot. And it was just a big drama. So, I mean, it can happen.
Okay, the Euros are 3 months away, and it will be live and exclusive at Optus Sport, of course. And there are still three places up for grabs, and the playoffs are later this week. Guys, who are your picks out of those playoff games to get through? Of course, we've got Georgia against Luxembourg, Wales, Finland, Bosnia and Herzegovina against Ukraine, Greece against Kazakhstan, Poland against Estonia, and Israel against Iceland.
I think I speak for a lot of our listeners in Australia when I say, Bame Pethia, let's go, Greece. We need Greece to get through, my friend.
No, I know that you need them to.
Yes.
Will they get
through? Of course they're going to get through.
Wales are going to get through.
Wales, if they obviously win against Finland, then they play Estonia or Poland in the final, which you would expect is Poland and Lewandowski, who we saw in great form, by the way.
Yep.
Yeah. Atletico, maybe his best game of the season, his best performance of the season.
That's going to be a really tight game, though.
Yeah.
What I like about Wales, though, I think they've got a great team spirit.
Yep.
And when they need to get results, they have done.
Yeah.
Obviously, Gareth Bale's not there now playing. But I think they've got enough quality where they could go and get a win with their manager, with their players and that team spirit. I think that's important in these situations.
The template has to be the win in Croatia in the qualifiers. It was just not enough to take them straight to the Euros, but that 2-0 win away, not conceding against Modric and everybody. They played really well. They've got those young players. Rob Page, I think he's a good manager who has that dressing room united. So it's down to them now. And the two games will be in Cardiff. So if they win, the first one is in Cardiff.
Yeah, that's right.
The final will be in Cardiff as well.
Exactly. Yeah, so. That's a big, big key. That's the key.
Yeah.
Because the fans are so like emotional about, you know, there's football and rugby. That's it. So like they're really, really passionate about the national team.
And Ukraine? I mean, we've got a couple of Spanish boys playing in Spain, playing for the Ukraine.
Yeah, Dovbyk and Sigankov at Girona have been doing sensationally well. In terms of, you know, footballing pedigree and heritage of all the countries that you've just mentioned there, Ukraine are right up there. So,
Lunin
as well.
Real Madrid number one goalkeeper at the moment.
Yeah, forgot about him. But yeah. He's also someone who's had a really good season. So, yeah, I mean, Ukraine probably have got a really good chance.
So there's a stack of great friendlies over the next week or so. Most notably has to be France against Germany. Julian.
Yeah, big game. I mean, we've played them a year ago or so, or 6 months ago, and they won 1-0. It was the first game after Hansi Flick had been sacked and Rudi Völler was the interim coach. And I think the French were maybe not as motivated, let's put it that way, than the Germans in Germany for that game, and they won. This feels like a little bit of a revenge. I think more than that, it's like a big game before the Euros to show what we can do. We'll have a few players who are not there. I think Konate is doubtful, Griezmann as well, but Kylian will lead the line. And this game is in Lyon as well, so you expect a big atmosphere. And I think this is the beginning of the Euros, really. Those games are on up to sport. This is for everybody the start of your preparation to get into the tournament.
I think most of the teams now have to be choosing what they're going to play that first game as best they can.
Pretty much.
Right now, I think these games are really, really important for that reason. The only thing I would say is those players that are in the latter stages of the Champions League, they won't be risking their health to play in friendlies. And I think that's the only reason why Griezmann...
Yeah, probably. Like you don't take risks.
Won't,
now.
Yeah.
But the squads that we see now will be 80, 85% the same one that we will see at the Euros, bar
100%. I'm not sure
about Germany. They're still trying to work out their team,
they're still
really.
Very much
Germany got so many good players. It's funny because Germany got so many good players. I think the only position they really lack for me is a striker. Like when I was growing up, you know, the striker was closer. Yeah. He was always the guy. I think he's the top goal scorer of World Cup history, I think I'm right in saying. But he was always the guy that scored the goals. Now they haven't had that so much. They've had makeshift players playing in those positions. But I think all around the midfield, the defence, they've got like some seriously talented players.
Kylian Mbappe, he's in massive form, right? So he's obviously he's finding a hard time at PSG. Him and what's his name?
Luis Enrique.
Luis Enrique aren't getting on that particularly well, I think. Or
it's not that,
he's leaving.
Yeah, exactly.
So he came on the weekend, or he's played on the weekend, scored a hat-trick, which helped them against Montpellier away from home. Going to this game, a lot of pressure on his shoulders, which he's used to now. Do you also see as France as being one of the favourites for the Euros?
I think they are the favourite, really. I placed them with England at the top ahead of everybody else, because I think England have an incredible squad. And after coming so close at the last Euros and the 2018 World Cup, this is the moment for them. But the French with the squad, the quality of the squad, the experience of winning, if you think about it, they've been the best team since 2016, really. Final of the Euros, winning the World Cup. Okay, the last Euros not so good. Another World Cup final, and now this Euros. I think, yeah, we have to be favorite. And this is going to be the first tournament where Kylian is the captain. And I think the armband means a lot to him. He's going to wear the number 10. So I think there will be the pressure on him. I think he can take it. And it's a bit simplistic to say, but a lot depends on him anyway. Yeah, Griezmann will have a big role to play, and so will be Konate, Upamecano. You can find top players and key positions, but really, at the end of the day, if Kylian is good, France are going to go far.
I think both sides are quality. Both sides have amazing players. Kylian, for me, is the best striker in the world. I think one thing that France has that I'm yet to see, and this is, you know, I'm not trying to be too negative to him, but Southgate, I think, can be England's problem because he plays too many defensive players.
I agree.
And if you're one of the best clubs in the best teams in the world, nations in the world, you should be playing all your best teams. If you're playing against France, okay, then maybe you put in a few more defensive players. But against everyone else, you should be playing your best players, best attacking players. And I think that's where France seem to get it right more often than not, and England don't.
Absolutely. So most notable other friendlies, England against Belgium, Germany against the Netherlands. Germany got France and the Netherlands, which...
England got Brazil and they've got Belgium.
That's right. And then you've got Spain against Brazil. So some big games coming up. And of course, they're live on Optus Sport. Looking forward to that. So it'll be a very, very, very entertaining couple of weeks of international football, as well as the regular with the Premier League and everything else. So France to win the Euros, Julian. You going with England, Jay?
Come on, you know the answer. Come on.
My heart tells me I want England, but my head tells me realistically I would go France.
Really?
You know as well, surely. Who do you think?
But that is only because I think Southgate won't play his attacking players.
Michael Bridges just right.
Yeah, great. Even he knows.
But I'm gonna give you
I'll tell you a story. At the World Cup in Qatar, obviously in 2022, when France played England in the quarterfinal, the French players said that in the tunnel, before going onto the pitch, before the start of the game, they could see in the English players' eyes and body language, attitude, that they didn't believe themselves they could beat the World Cup champions. And I think there's a time in, especially at that level, where the margin is so thin, it's sort of almost about belief more than anything else. Yeah. Because they're all talented, they're all the best players in the world for the top, top teams. And the ruthlessness that the French have had in those competitions to go that far, England really never had it, even not in 2018 or in 2021. And that's what really was striking for the French players in Qatar, was that they looked at the English players and said, they don't believe they can beat us. And that's why France won that.
I think France actually play their best players. Like there's no starting player in France that where you think someone else should be playing.
True.
In England, you see that. In England, like you see, for example, Henderson's in the team, Calvin Phillips and Maguire, and they're not even playing. Like Henderson's at Ajax right now. He was in Saudi before, but yet he gets called into the England squad, where you look at other players that could be in there that are better than him that are not.
I'm with you.
And that's a problem. So when I see the French team, I see a team that everyone knows what's expected of them. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows what their starting 11 is and what it should be. I don't see that with England. I see a lot of confusion still. It's like, who are we playing against? What formation shall we play? What's the personnel? Where are we going to fit him into the squad? And I think that's the kind of part that causes confusion for the players. And like you said, when you go out and you see players' eyes are now 100% focused on the game, and then you see that some of the players, the England players, like you said, is like thinking, oh, do you know, he should be playing. I can't believe like Phillips is playing. Because you have them thoughts as a player. Sometimes you think in your mind, he should be playing. And then you see the managers choosing something else.
Yeah, so the question I'll ask you is, do you believe that Deschamps' experience of winning the World Cup himself, as well as the manager of winning the World Cup as a manager, is that extra bit that gives that determination, that self-belief to the players? Even though you're talking about players like Kylian Mbappe and Griezmann, and who are obviously extremely confident anyway.
But if you look, the last World Cup, Lionel Scaloni had won the Copa America before. The Euros before, Mancini had won trophies.
club level, leagues, etc., etc. And we can go down. Then Deschamps before, we can go down. Southgate has never won anything. And I think, and it's not just Southgate, others are similar. I think you transmit this winning mentality to your squad, especially you've got 7 games to win. It's not a 38-game season. It's not a 17-game or 15-game in the Champions League. It's 7 games. And if there's not that winning mentality, there's something missing. And for me, that's what has been missing for England.
No, I completely agree, to be honest. I can 100% agree. And the thing I was, I mean, Kylian Mbappe, let me just say about him, nothing seems to bother him. Nothing. Whether people are talking about money, salaries, you know, the president not getting on along with him, you know, him having arguments in the dressing room, apparently. Nothing seems to bother this guy. He goes on the pitch and he just performs. And it's like, it's almost like, man, this guy has the like real ability. Whether he plays on the left, whether he plays up front, he is just a real talisman. And I think in this day and age, people talk about Haaland and, you know, he's a fantastic goal scorer. But if you talk about all-round player, Kylian Mbappe is a guy.
But England have kind of got not the same player, but a player of that level in Jude Bellingham, right? Not hasn't been there as long as Mbappe and hasn't had the experience and won everything, but he's got that self-belief.
But let's see the responsibility that he's been given or not by Southgate. I want to see him play in the same position that he plays for Real Madrid. Will Southgate do that?
That's a problem for me. Like I said this before. I want to see Rice, I want to see Bellingham, and I want to see Foden.
Yeah.
If I see that triangle in midfield, I'll feel confident because I know that Kane's going to score goals regardless. Saka's can be in that one-on-one situation. He can come inside and link up. My only maybe the left-hand side at the moment, I would go with Anthony Gordon if he's 100% fit. I like him. He's got a great energy. But too many times I see Southgate putting out a defensive England team. And that's where that's where it upsets me. Because I think there's so many good English players right now that are playing at the top of their game, the likes of Foden. And he's thinking about putting the likes of Henderson in still to be a bit more guarded. Where I'm saying, go and play. You know, just go and let these boys play. Let them show their ability. When you talk about Bellingham, I think Bellingham is unbelievable. I think he is one of those players. He's a box-to-box. He's very much like a Gerrard, I would compare him to, as in his game. He gets forward, he gets back. He's got ability to score goals. He makes tackles. He's industrious. And then you've got the likes of Foden on the other side, who's gracious. He's a ball carrier. He can thread things through. He gets in great areas. I think at the moment, there's a great blend of players playing for England. But Southgate is the one that's going to make England win the World Cup or not.
Just a scary thought thinking about La Liga next season, Real Madrid, Kylian Mbappe playing with Jude Bellingham in the same
time. That would be crazy.
Yeah.
That would be crazy.
They would be unbeatable.
Be absolutely loving. Looking forward to it and can't wait for it. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you very much, guys, for joining us here in London in our special edition. Remember, Optus Sport is the only place where you can watch the Premier League, La Liga, J League, K League and the WSL live, as well as the remaining European qualifiers and a stack of great internationals this week. See you next week on Optus Sport Football Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.